Blog Talk Radio.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under His love and covering is so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise Him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we're talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth? It will set you free.
Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Radio show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Radio show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Radio show. Sounds
of the Living Water, Radio Show. Well, good afternoon, listeners. This is Rob Christensen with Visible Secrets, Invisible Power, and the Bible. And let me go ahead and read about my main topic. We'll be coming to terms with how to understand the twilight of the psychopaths. There's a great article by Kevin Barrett, who's a professor and well-established with publications. And he's also an expert on sustainability. I will also highlight frontline news about climate collapse. We are living in a physics lab in which psychopaths at the top of the power structure use scientists to develop weapons rather than useful tools that benefit humanity. And they may be disguised as useful tools, but as with climate engineering, as I've said repeatedly throughout many blogs, it's very destructive. It's a response to what hydrocarbons have done to heating the planet, which is the main force behind the troubles we face as far as an overheated planet. But it's climate engineering that's exacerbating the problem. It's making things far worse. So my point again is, if we can become aware of this crime against humanity, the lines in the sky, we can much more quickly start solving the problems we have to solve now, not 20 years from now, as often mainstream media will make it appear that, oh, 20 years from now, 50 years from now, it used to be 100 years from now, which pacifies the public into thinking we are not in an emergency. I also want to comment from the last blog, God is not a utility. I also have a summary of a session with Deepak Chopra and Marion Williamson. It was a video conference online. It was very, very interesting. The article by Kevin Barrett, Twilight of the Psychopaths, it's so good. I would like to read that article because it kind of sums up what I've said all along about Genesis and the story of how it seems even Genesis gets, you know, that the original book of the Bible has been misinterpreted, and how it is that we have such insanity today by some of our rulers, yet not always recognized or acknowledged by, you know, the people. And finally, I'll update on Global Alert News, climate engineering. And it's interesting that weather whiplash, threat multiplier. These are terms that Dane Wigington, the Global Alert News author, has used for years, and now weathermen are using them. So it's as if mainstream media borrowed from Dane Wigington, yet the same mainstream media will never tell you one word about the reality of climate engineering. Again, it's a shame that things get so hidden from the public eye, how cleverly hidden they become. Again, it's visible secrets. We see it with our own eyes and yet don't acknowledge it. It's part and parcel of the way things are today. So in the last blog, God is Not a Utility, the theme of the hour was that we become so preoccupied with personal business that we don't have time for companionship. And I want to give one example. Again, we become so self-important, whether we have somebody's wedding that we're helping planning for, or a businessman has to deal with their renters. People tend to excuse themselves from invitations from others that, oh, I'm too busy. I can't be there. I can't spend 10 minutes, accepting your invitation. I won't attend. And I had a recent experience, and I want you listeners to think about it too. When have we had a time with our cars, automobiles, trucks, when we felt rage, road rage, when we reacted impulsively? Maybe, we could have reacted in a much calmer way, a more loving way. Well, anyway, the point I bring out is that there's a timeless presence, and people that have that tend to remain calm and are able to handle a situation and just be themselves without exacerbating, without inflaming the problem at hand. And we become separate sometimes, self-important. Like I just said, God is not a utility, and we become so self-important that we separate ourselves from others. It's like others are objects. So I have to laugh because I shared my story about road rage with all my co-drivers as I supervise with them, and they all got a laugh. It wasn't that big a deal. And, one can look back at their mistakes and you might as well laugh. It's nothing you can do about it. It's downstream. But when a person backs a truck, you have a blind spot on your right side. You can look at that right side mirror, but all you'll see is the trailer. So it's a very dangerous time because if you have to block a street in order to get in a parking lot, you may not see well, and cars may want to pass you before you start your backing. So it's a real dangerous moment. And what happened is, as I blocked the street so I could get in a parking lot, I noticed a vehicle, a truck, a certain distance, a few exits down, relatively close though. So I was an opportunist. I'm kind of in a hurry. And I blocked the street and started backing. And luckily, I spotted a light in the mirror. I could see some light, so I stopped. And sure enough, this truck had pinched himself right by where I was going to back. So there was no way I could back the truck. I had to get out and confront the individual, gave him the signal to, push back or to back up. And that individual did not do so. He got out and screamed at me. And I kind of screamed back. I said, well, geez, it'll just take a few seconds. And got back in my truck. And, of course, that individual, as I was backing, he was going to stay pinched. So I had to get within a foot of him. And then he backed up. Well, the point of it is there's many different ways to react to a stressful situation like this. another driver said, geez, Rob, you should have just stood your ground and waited till he backed up. You didn't need to get out of the truck or anything. Just waste his time so that he'll finally, you know, realize that he's got no choice but to back up. Because I had business to do. I had to get it done. And it is frustrating when you have to get out of your truck because somebody's, you know, being stubborn. But I think the person, you know, in looking at a more loving way of looking at people and yourself, and instead of being separate, just being calm and opening a dialogue, I could have stood out and said, geez, it looks like you're in a hurry. So am I. You know, how can we, and I, you know, if I blocked you and wasted some of your time, I'm really sorry about that, but this is very important because I'm behind too. Just some kind of way to open a dialogue instead of a shouting match. So to end the story here, as I was straightening, the man stubbornly persisted right next to my truck, claimed that I hit him when I finally straightened out the truck. I don't know that I did or not. It doesn't matter, but he got out of the truck and cursed me for hitting his truck. And, you know, I responded simply saying, goodness, you know, I can't look both ways at once. You know, I had my own self-defense. But this whole incident enters into the theme of psychopathology, where there's a certain rage that people have where there's just no compassion. You know, it's all for the self. It's all for the greed, all for the anger, all for the win. And there's just no sense of morality sometimes. So I claim no victor in this confrontation. But it was a very valuable lesson for me to just kind of pick this event apart and figure out, you know, could I have done it differently? Could I have improved the situation? Could I, you know, ended it with grace instead of anger? So in my search to live in a way where I'm in a state of timeless presence, I've come upon presidential candidate Marianne Williamson. I mentioned her a bit in my last blog. It is not that I agree with all her positions. I'm not here to talk about politics to any great degree, but about the morality that needs to be restored in politics. That's what Marianne Williams is addressing. And I think it's interesting how, even though she's on the fringes, and maybe not there to unhinge us, you know, to break us free, but it's worthy of discussion because she does come from a point of, we need, for example, a Department of Peace, or an Academy of Peace instead of an Academy of War, a Child Defense Department. The long and short of it is she's a visionary, and she's on this, she uses the analogy of the present establishment politicians. She's somewhat outside of the establishment, though I'd argue that, you know, in issues like the Zionist Israeli government, she understands the evil of it, but not the degree maybe that she could. I think it goes much deeper than she understands when it comes to 9/11 and issues like that. But she's open to discussing those issues when others in the establishment won't even bring it up. So I think that's very important. But her analogy is this, is you know, she sees her fellow candidates as mechanics. You know, they're fixing the system as they think they can. But it's one thing to have a fixed vehicle, but it's another thing to get that vehicle on the road to where you want to get it to. So as a visionary, you know, she feels that's what's missing in politics, is politicians themselves are very dedicated individuals in trying to fix the system, but they don't have the direction that's needed, you know, the path, the navigation, what route are we going to take? You need a very clear vision of where you want to go. So, again, Marianne Williamson, her book, A Course in Miracles, is a bestseller. She studied comparative religion. Again, moral traditions, where she's putting together that, and you know, the commonality of religions instead of religion as a each religion as exclusive from the other. And she's also known Deepak Chopra, another outstanding author, for decades. And Mr. Chopra was with her just on Monday, and I watched this 2-hour live stream video conference. And it was very, very well put, worth its time. I did pay a little to get into that. So again, I'm always seeking a little better understanding of truth and the reality that we're in, as I perceive, you know, this planet is in an existential emergency. We can't sit back and just talk, but understanding in a nutshell some of the issues, and as Marianne Williamson says, the vision, we have to have a vision to get out of this sleepwalking, this mess we're in. And because we're sleepwalking to extinction, that's the way I see it, if we don't change fairly quickly, quite quickly. So we need to discover the divine within to ever rule out the diabolical. Those in powers with their instrument of death, they're so confident in their supremacy that they've programmed a lot of the public, most of the public. You know, it's so easy to become programmed by the mass media and repeated lies. And it just gets into our way of living and without us realizing it sometimes. So there's spiritual leaders versus our present leaders. You know, what's the difference? Well, as Mr. Chakra says, and now it's fear, bigotry, hatred, winning at all cost. And, you know, he says, to really analyze a politician, because it is important how we vote. As Paul Wellstone once said, politics is about the improvement of people's lives, Senator Wellstone from Minnesota. And there's a certain litmus test, you know, is a politician authentic, honest? In other words, many politicians, you know, the litmus test is at some point they lie about themselves or something of their past to get brownie points with the public. You know, they're not being genuine. And it's so common, it's so prevalent, where all these fact checkings, you know, catch politicians in the act of lying. So why not be honest in yourself? We all follow not just the leaders. You know, we sell our souls in many ways for our material needs and our jobs and whatnot. And we become afraid to confront some of the things we know that cause suffering throughout the planet, especially when we're, you know, a developed, wealthy country, an empire, so to speak, as I've said in other blogs, that in reality, the United States is an empire in that we have, 800 military bases. So the conclusions that in this conference is, you know, simply to return to love, start loving people, embrace being human. Love is action. And just as with my road rage incident, I look back on that, and I could have, you know, that attitude of loving is that, hey, this guy's miserable, he's mad, and have I not been mad? Have I not done stupid, you know, things like that too? It's just approach people with that calmness, and that rubs off on them, and that calms them down, and, you know, that spreads. So a few more things that Marianne said, and then I'll go on to this article that was so well put that I'll read it. So I don't want to spend too much time here. But, you know, she said we need a qualitative change in our souls and a quantitative change in our actions. So she concludes that, you know, we have no monopoly on truth. The common core of moral tradition, you know, is not mutual exclusion. It's tolerating each other, finding out from each other where they're at. It's changed from the inside out. And Deepak added that, you know, think the impossible even if it is impossible. Change the story from a backstory to the next story. Ask your conscience, you know, where you're at. Ultimately, the loved story is the only one worth it. And also to find a place to reflect an openness conversation, you know, where you can have an open conversation, whether it's a yoga facility or a church. You know, we are social beings, and we need to chat with others. We can't just look at the internet like I'm sometimes guilty to do without interacting with others and being present. The question and answer session, again, without getting into detail, but it was brought up that paternalism of the Democratic National Committee, again, you know, whether you're Republican or Democrat, you know, both parties are broken, according to Williamson, and I would agree. And on the Democratic side, since she is running as a Democrat, I think it's very true, is that, you know, the committee overseeing the candidates, there is a certain paternalism where they dictate everything instead of having an openness to let expression take over freely, where donors are so influential to campaigns and debates, where if you don't have big money or corporate backing and so forth, then you're not in the race. It's almost, you know, it's very difficult. And Marion points out too that George Washington warned of party factions. In other words, if we're a government of, for, and by the people, I think Washington could see that, you know, if we have parties like the Democrat, Republican, you know, we could splinter. And we need to constantly be in touch with the founding principles. And that's where, you know, Marion points out reparations, for example. At the time of slavery and so forth, there was a promise to the African American people, or the slaves, as whatever the proper word to put, is that they were to receive 40 acres and a mule, you know, as reparations. And that never happened. So how can a country heal until it's been able to look realistically at its past as to, you know, what it's done to others and how it's harmed others to get over and improve and make progress? And that the same, of course, would go for the Native American community that she said give them back the Black Hills as an example, that was stolen from them, and that could actually politically would not be that difficult to do, to transfer over back to the tribe the Black Hills, and yet still within a functioning society, you know, where tourism wouldn't disappear, but there would be a tribal government. So I want to get on to reading this article by Kevin Garrett, and just give me a moment, and if there's any questions, I'd be glad to take them, but I'm going to get the computer awoken. I don't have a way to keep the screen from disappearing. But Kevin Barrett, again, is an expert on sustainability, and I'll be with him in just a moment here. Let's see. There we go. And a little about Kevin Barrett. He's a co-founder of the Muslim Christian Jewish Alliance for 9/11 Truth. And he has taught English, French, Arabic, American civilization, humanities, African literature, folklore, and Islam at colleges and universities in the country and in Paris. Madison, Wisconsin, that was the last place that he was a professor. And he's famous for getting kicked out because he does speak his mind and very truthful things that, you know, some cannot accept. So Barrett became a 9/11 truth activist in 2004 after reading David Griffin's The New Pearl Harbor. Again, I've mentioned these in blogs, the New Pearl Harbor, where that was the planning stage for 9/11. And he's conducted follow-up research that convinced him Griffin had accurately summarized evidence indicating 9/11 was an inside job. And in the summer of 2006, Republican state legislators and Fox newscasters demanded that Barrett be fired from his job teaching an introductory Islam class at the U of Wisconsin-Madison. But the university refused to buckle, and Barrett got high marks from his students. He has appeared in several documentary films, lectures widely on 9/11, and hosts radio programs. So I just want to introduce the fact that indeed this man is a very credible source. He's got quite a background of achievement. And he has a quote here from John Lennon, which introduces this Twilight of the Psychopaths article. Our society is run by insane people for insane objectives. I think we're being run by maniacs for maniacal ends, and I think I'm liable to be put away as insane for expressing that. That's what's insane about it. And John Lennon, before his murder by CIA mind control subject Mark David Chapman. And again, we can get into conspiracy theory. Was Mark David Chapman CIA controlled? That's beyond the scope of what I'm talking about, but I'd be easily open to that possibility personally. The article starts. This article I think is so important because we need to understand if 9/11, for example, wasn't indeed an inside job, and most people haven't really grasped that. How important is that? If we don't know that, where will we end up? Will we just continue to sleepwalk into extinction? We have to know these things. So when Gandhi was asked questions of Western civilization, he said it would be a good idea, but that oft-cited quote is misleading, assuming it does as it does, that civilization is an unmitigated blessing. Civilized people, we are told, live peacefully and cooperatively with their fellows, sharing the necessary labor in order to obtain the leisure to develop arts and sciences. And while that would be a good idea, it is not a good description of what has been going on in the so-called advanced cultures during the past 8,000 years. Civilization as we know it is largely the creation of psychopaths. All civilizations, our own included, have been based on slavery and warfare. Incidentally, the latter term is a euphemism, just a soft way of saying for mass murder, euphemism. The prevailing recipe for civilization is simple. Use lies and brainwashing to create an army of controlled systematic mass murderers. Use that army to enslave large numbers of people, for example, seize control of their labor power and its fruits. Use that slave labor power to improve the brainwashing process. In other words, by using the economic surplus to employ scribes, priests, and PR men. Then go back to step one and repeat the process. So psychopaths, according to Bennett, have played a disproportionate role in the development of civilization because they are hardwired to lie, kill, injure, and generally inflict great suffering on other humans without feeling any remorse. And get this, and this is where the book Ishmael by Daniel Quinn, I've talked about in several blogs, where he says, you know, even the Bible was twisted by the writers of Genesis. Though the story itself is sacred, there's some facts left out or twisted. So the inventor of civilization, the first tribal chieftain who successfully brainwashed an army of controlled mass murderers, was almost certainly a genetic psychopath. And there I put the word Cain, you know, the tribe of Cain versus the tribe of Abel. I think the Genesis story, if it really means it's as sacred as it is, one has to understand that Cain is not necessarily just a one person, a brother, a biological brother of Abel, that a brother in terms of why our brothers are the other tribe. It's a figurative sense. So whatever you make of it, it does make sense that at some point, some tribal chieftain invented a way to be a bully and fool people and lie to people so that they could take resources and kill others, take land and grow their population at the loss of other tribes, other populations. So from way back then to a point now, it's very much continued where Cain keeps killing Abel, to a point where, as predicted in Genesis, the fall of man, you know, we're at a point of extinction. That is definitely a fall of man. And I'll get into that with the Global Alert News by Dane Wigington, some of the details, like in Australia, how extinction is well in process. People are dying in that country or in that continent. To continue on with the articles, since the momentous discovery of psychopaths have enjoyed a significant advantage over non-psychopaths in the struggle for power in civilizational hierarchies, especially military hierarchies. Military institutions are tailor-made for psychopathic killers. The 5% or so human males who feel no remorse about killing their fellow human beings make the best soldiers. 95% who are extremely reluctant to kill make terrible soldiers, unless they are brainwashed with highly sophisticated modern techniques that turn them, temporarily it's hoped, into functional psychopaths. So I think of Julian Assange, again, exposing films of our troops being those same psychopaths, murdering innocent people. That's probably why they paid $1 billion to put Assange in jail and make him miserable. As I understand, he may not have much time to live. So in On Killing, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman has rewritten military history to highlight what other histories hide. The fact that military science is less about strategy and technology than about overcoming the instinctive human reluctance to kill members of our own species. The true revolution in military affairs was not Donald Rumsfeld, a former defense secretary, you know, during the Gulf War. It was not Rumsfeld's move to high tech in 2001, but Brigadier General SLA Marshall's discovery in the 1940s that only 15 to 20% of World War II soldiers along the line of fire would use their weapons. Those 80 to 85% who did not fire did not run or hide. In many cases, they were willing to risk great danger to rescue comrades, get ammunition, or run messages. But they simply would not fire their weapons at the enemy, even when faced with repeated waves of bonsai charges. So Marshall's discovery and subsequent research proved that in all previous wars, a tiny minority of soldiers, the 5% who are natural-born psychopaths and perhaps a few temporarily insane initiators or imitators, did almost all the killing. Normal men, and you know, I think we can think of movies too, you know, about the Vietnam War that pretty much reflect this nature of, you know, a few killers. Normal men just went through the motions and, if at all possible, refused to take life of an enemy soldier, even if that meant giving up their own. The implication? Wars are ritualized mass murders by psychopaths of non-psychopaths. This cannot be good for humanity's genetic endowment. And again, I guess aside from the article, I'll point out that I disagree that it's not all genetics. Indeed, there is obviously people that have just been born and kill without remorse and don't even know the difference. I don't dispute there's a genetic aspect, but it's also, you know, a learned thing too. And again, the whole brainwashing programming process of the military does turn people into psychopaths. Not all, but definitely some. Marshall's work brought a Copernican revolution to military science. In the past, everyone believed that the soldier willing to kill for his country was the heroic norm, while one who refused to fight was a cowardly aberration. The truth, as it turned out, was that the normative soldier hailed from the psychopathic 5%. The same majority would rather die than fight. The implication, too frightening for even the likes of Marshall and Grossman to fully digest, was that the norms for soldiers' behavior in battle had been set by psychopaths. That meant that psychopaths were in control of the military as an institution. Worse, it meant that psychopaths were in control of society's perception of military affairs. Evidently, psychopaths exercised an enormous amount of power in seemingly sane, normal society. How could that be? In political poenerology, and poenerology means finding out about crime, basically. That's what poenerology means, if I understand it right. You know, what is it that makes people commit crimes? Lavazuski explains that clinical psychopaths enjoy advantages even in nonviolent competitions to climb the ranks of social hierarchies because they can lie without remorse and without the telltale physiological stress that is measured by lie detector tests. Psychopaths can always say whatever is necessary to get what they want. In court, for example, psychopaths can tell extreme bald-faced lies in a plausible manner, while their sane opponents are handicapped by an emotional predisposition to remain within a hailing distance of the truth. Too often, the judge or jury imagines the truth must be somewhere in the middle, and then issues decisions that benefit the psychopath. As with judges and juries, so too with those charged with decisions concerning who to promote and who not to promote in corporate, military, and governmental hierarchies. The result is that all hierarchies inevitably become top-heavy with psychopaths. So-called conspiracy theorists, some of whom deserve the pejorative or negative connotation of that much abused term, often imagine that secret societies of Jews, Jewish, Jesuits, bankers, communists, Bilderbergers, Muslim extremists, Papists, and so on, are secretly controlling history, doing dastardly deeds, and or threatening to take over the world. As a leading conspiracy theorist, according to Wikipedia, I feel eminently qualified to offer an alternative conspiracy theory, and that's Kevin Garrett speaking here, which, like the alternative conspiracy theory of 9/11, is both simpler and more accurate than the prevailing wisdom. The only conspiracy that matters is the conspiracy of the psychopaths against the rest of us. Behind the apparent insanity of contemporary history is the actual insanity of psychopaths fighting to preserve their disproportionate power. And as that power grows ever more threatened, the psychopaths grow ever more desperate. again, climate engineering. They are doubling down on climate engineering now, weather whiplash, using hurricanes as weapons, and on and on. And, you know, Donald Trump, for example, was approached and explained everything about climate engineering from experts like Dane Wigington or his or people that came to speak for Dane. So though they can throw out to the public, oh, we're going to stop climate engineering or chemtrails, whatever word he used, just the opposite is happening. So, you know, that's a lie. And that's what psychopaths are all about. They'll lie to get whatever they want. We are witnessing the apotheosis of the overworld, or the apotheosis, the criminal syndicate or overlapping set of syndicates that lurks above ordinary society and law, just as the underworld works below it. The crime, you know, the mafia, the gangs, and the criminal syndicate above is, you look at people like, you know, public people like Bush's Defense Secretary Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney. So they're part of that overworld. And, you know, I apologize, apotheosis, I looked it up, I can't quite remember, but I think it means the overtaking, you know, the takeover. So in 9/11, in the 9/11 wars, we are seeing the final desperate power grab or endgame, as Alec Jones would say, of brutal, cunning gangs of CIA drug runners and president killers, money laundering international bankers and their hitmen, economic and otherwise, corrupt military contractors and gung-ho generals, corporate predators and their political enablers, brainwashers and mind rapists, euphemistically known as psyops, experts and public relations specialists. In short, the whole sick crew of certifiable psychopaths running our so-called civilization. And they are running scared. It was the terror of losing control that they projected onto the rest of us by blowing up the Twin Towers and inciting temporary psychopathic terror, rage in the American public. Why does pathocracy fear it is losing control? Well, because it is threatened by the spread of knowledge. The greatest fear of any psychopath is being found out. And again, that's where climate engineering comes in, where they so cleverly have woven this idea that chemtrail is just some conspiracy theory. It's just what you see in the sky is just condensation trails. They're not. It's not harmless. When in reality, they're spraying poison in the form of metallic nanoparticles that we take in as we breathe. They penetrate our blood-brain barriers. So, you know, we're filled with these metals. And, you know, you think of electrosmog, forces like 5G that are going to interact with some of those particles that are in our tissues and make us miserable, headaches, mind control, or whatever. As George H.W. Bush said to journalist Sarah McClendon in December of 1992, if people knew what we had done, they would chase us down the street and lynch us. Given that Bush is reported to have participated in parties where child prostitutes were sodomized and otherwise abused, among his many other crimes, his statement to McClendon should be taken seriously. Psychopaths go through life knowing that they are completely different from other people. They quickly learn to hide their lack of empathy while carefully studying others' emotions so as to mimic normalcy while cold-bloodedly manipulating the normals. Today, thanks to new information technologies, we are on the brink of unmasking the psychopaths in building a civilization of, by, and for normal human being, a civilization without war, a civilization based on truth, a civilization in which the saintly few rather than the diabolical few would gravitate to positions of power. We already have the knowledge necessary to diagnose psychopathic personalities and keep them out of power. We have the knowledge necessary to dismantle the institutions in which psychopaths especially flourish: militaries, intelligence agencies, large corporations, and secret societies. We simply need to disseminate this knowledge and the will to use it as widely as possible. Above all, we need to inform the public about how psychopaths co-opt and corrupt normal human beings. One way they do this is by manipulating shame and denial, emotions foreign to psychopaths, but common and easily induced among normals. Consider how gangs and secret societies, psychopaths, guilds in disguise, recruit new members. Some criminal gangs and Satanist covens demand that candidates for admission commit a murder to earn their stripes. Skull and Bones, that's a well-known secret society. The Yale-based secret society that supplies the CIA with drug runners, mind rapists, child abusers, and professional killers requires neophytes to lie naked in a coffin and masturbate in front of older members while reciting the candidate's entire sexual history. Now, this is really ugly stuff that I'm reading here, but the more I've learned, the more it's true that, you know, to program people, if you are one to lie, if you don't have empathy towards others, you'll do anything you can to manipulate others. You, as I've said, and as Daniel Quinn said in the book Ishmael, it's about biology. There's predators, but in the case of psychopaths, my name for them, psychopaths, it is hyper-predator. A hyper-predator violates creation's laws, natural laws. They're in total violation. And it seems the ultimate challenge is to recognize that we're being duped. Good people are being duped. And, let me go on. So by forcing the neophyte to engage in ritualized behavior that would be horrendously shameful in normal society, the psychopath's guild destroys the candidate's normal personality, assuming he had one in the first place, and turns the individual into a co-opted, corrupt, degraded shadow of his former self, a manufactured psychopath or psychopath's apprentice. This manipulation of shame has the added benefit of making psychopathic organizations effectively invisible to normal society. Despite easily available media reports, American voters in 2004 simply refused to see that the two major party presidential candidates had been part of this Skull and Bones. I won't go into detail, but I guess there was plenty of evidence that, who was it, John Kerry and George Bush Jr. were a part of this underworld. I digress. Likewise, many Americans, I think this is interesting, many Americans have long refused to see that hawkish elements of the overworld operating through the CIA had obviously been the murderers of JFK, MLK, RFK, JFK Jr., Malcolm X, Che Guevara, President Allende of Chile, Paul Wellstone, Lumumba in Africa, Aguilera, and Diem in Vietnam. And I have to stop at Wellstone because I had studied, though his sons were in charge of, of the public statement where they concluded that they believed that it was just an accident. Unfortunately, they did not know about weather warfare, that you can create tremendous winds by ice nucleation. You can create a storm undetected by others. And there was a power outage during the time that plane failed, a total power outage. So the ability to turn off systems, turn off security, is what these psychopaths can do. So though I haven't spent enough time, I'm open to the idea that indeed Wellstone was very likely executed. He was at the pinnacle of power in the Senate. He was well revered, very popular, very powerful, and at the tip of the balance as well. So psychopaths refuse to see, they refuse to see the evidence that the psychopath guilds running America's most powerful institution use the horrific forms of sexualized abuse imaginable to induce multiple personality disorder in child victims, then use the resulting mind control slaves as disposable drug runners, prostitutes, Manchurian candidates to see the continuing murders of millions of people around the world in what amounts to an American Holocaust. So those are harsh words. They refuse to see evidence that psychopath guilds running, and of course, they refuse to see 9/11 was a transparently obvious inside job and that their own psychopath-dominated military intelligence apparatus is behind almost every major terrorist outrage of recent decades. All of this psychopathic behavior at the top of the social hierarchy is simply too shameful for ordinary people to see. So they avert their gaze, just as wives of husbands who are sexually abusing their children sometimes refuse to see what is happening in plain view. If deep, deep denial were a river in Egypt, American citizens' willful blindness would be more like the Marianas Trench. But thanks to the power of the internet, people everywhere are waking up. The only obvious non-psychopath among Republican presidential candidates, Ron Paul, also happens to be the only candidate in either party with significant grassroots support. If love is embedded in the revolution Ron Paul heralds, that is because Dr. Paul, a kindly, soft-spoken physician who has delivered more than 4,000 babies, implicitly recognizes that government is the invention and tool of psychopaths and therefore must be strictly limited in scope and subjected to rigorous system of checks and balances, lest the psychopath's tools of fear and hatred replace love as the glue that binds society together. And again, both parties, Ron Paul, Paul Wellstone, you know, it's this dichotomous thinking, the splitting of people is what the psychopaths want. They want this media theatrical war staged with the impeachment process that it's not getting us anywhere. It's distracting the public. Meanwhile, the climate collapses. So the decline in militarism since World War II in advanced countries, the spread of literacy and communications technology, and the people's growing demands for a better life together represent a gathering force that terrifies the plutocracy. Those alternately competing then cooperating gangs of psychopaths who have ruled through lies, fear, and intimidation since the dawn of so-called civilization. Since nuclear weapons have made war obsolete, the plutocracy is terrified that its favorite special control mechanism, ritualized mass slaughter, is increasingly unavailable. And if war was the great human tragedy, the pathocrats' pathetic attempt at a war substitute, the transparently phony war on terror, is repeating it as sheerest farce. Truly, we are witnessing the twilight of the psychopaths. Whether in their death throes they succeed in pulling down the curtain of eternal night on all of us, or whether we resist them and survive to see the dawn of a civilization worthy of the name, is the greatest decision in which all of us others, however humbly, are now participating. That's a very profound statement. So that's the end of the article, and that ran me toward the end of what I wanted to get across. But think about it. You know, that's an existential statement at the end here by an author that has done a lot of research about the psychology of how it is that good people get programmed, and, you know, that this inertia in society that we know there's this gathering storm coming, and yet we're like deer in the headlights. We're just not getting things done when we have to right now, and not be pacified to think, as the media would have us think, that, oh, 20 years from now, 100 years from now, we better change. It's now. And that's part of what Marianne Williamson and Deepak Chopra addressed. So with just a couple minutes left here, a little bit about what Dane Wigington has mentioned with back to climate engineering about evidence of our crisis. Let's take the Alaska Iditarod. We've had the last 5 or 6 years where they haven't really been able to do the Iditarod, and that is the dog sled race across Alaska. There's no snow. I mean, it's too warm. So whether it's Alaska or Australia, whether it's the northern hemisphere or the southern hemisphere, let's take a look at Australia. That's deep in extinction right now. Here's an example. The koalas with all the fires, they're practically going extinct. And that's, you know, we see that animal, that cute animal in pictures, and we fall in love with all these sights of our wildlife, yet they're vanishing exponentially fast, not just the koalas, but worldwide, different species. And a parent comment in Australia where it's like a desert nightmare with blowing wind and sand and heat. They said, we can't get our child out of the house. What kind of life is that for our children? Where we can't step outside. It's too hot, too windy, too dry, too sandy. And presently, temperatures in Australia, 104 degrees Fahrenheit, 113 degrees Fahrenheit, breaking records, and more heat to come. And in terms of centigrade, that's 40 to 45 degrees centigrade. But these are insanely hot temperatures. And it's, again, as I've stated many times, we have the power to control and cool our weather over large portions of the United States. And we have to learn this. We have to a critical mass of awareness so that even though hydrocarbons are the chief cause of the crisis that we're now in toward extinction, climate engineering is what, if we can remove it and expose it, then we can take the radical measures to reduce the hydrocarbons, to capture them or do whatever. But but the biggest lie is in the sky, where people, scientists will still say, oh, we need geoengineering to solve the problem, to fix it. No, the last 70 years, climate engineering has only inflamed the heating. So we need to wake up, and that's where I may not get admittance to a college master's program to have access to campus. Big deal. I'll go to libraries. I can go to any library in the Twin Cities and beyond. And I look forward to joining with other people and continued contact with groups through the internet, through this radio blog, you know, for the awakening process. But in conclusion, to keep in mind, you know, as we're on the fringes, you know, as much as people like Bernie Sanders are, you know, popular, they're still on the fringes. They aren't unhinging us. We really need to become unhinged now, not later. Where I use the example of Sanders supporting, you know, the military efforts against Syria. It's, you know, the, socially you can attract people to the political process, but we're stuck in an envelope if we can't look at the military. You know, if war is at the core. Climate engineering is war at the core of all nature and all people. It's the most fundamental war on humanity ever that's ever happened, yet the greatest cover-up, in my opinion, along with 9/11, where both the incident and the operations of the incident of 9/11 and the operations of climate engineering, they're right in front of our eyes. And understandably, it's hard. It's, you know, I've seen aerosol trails from decades myself. Didn't realize it till only 3 years ago. So I don't claim to be holier than thou. Not at all. And as I said in my example of truck driver rage, I seek to find that peace within myself so that I can be more awake, more active, more at ease, less stress, so that I can get things done and just be myself. So time is running out, and I've got a lot of other preparations for the workday as I'm in the Postal Service, and there's a lot of work to be done at this time of year. So happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, whatever. If there's any questions, I can take a few moments. Other than that, I'll be fine to close the show.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
Teach the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under His love and covering is so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise Him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we're talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.